It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The stroke of his executive pen, President Donald Trump fulfilled a central campaign promise and killed one of President Obama's signature trade deals, the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Great thing for the American worker, what we just did.
The action drew a sharp response from Republican Senator John McCain, who tweeted, quote, POTUS withdrawing from TPP is a serious mistake for America's economy and strategic position in the Asia-Pacific. Meeting with union leaders this afternoon, the president defended his actions, insisting TPP was not in America's best interests.
You guys did a great job.
The president also signed two other executive orders, one implementing a hiring freeze on federal workers, the other reinstating the so-called Mexico City policy, prohibiting federal funding of foreign organizations that promote or provide abortions.
You are great people.
Trade and jobs were the prime focus of President Trump's self-declared first day at work, meeting with business leaders in the Roosevelt Room. The president pledged to reduce what he has called business-killing regulations by as much as 75%, and again promised to reduce the corporate tax rate, though he left open the possibility he might accept a cut to 20%, not his preferred 15%. Business leaders did express concerns about his repeated threat to slap huge tariffs on goods when corporations move manufacturing out of the United States.
We did talk about the border tax quite a bit, and we did talk about the sorts of industries that might be helped or hurt by that. Look, I would take the president at his word here. He's not going to do anything to harm competitiveness.
And there could be more big changes ahead. In his first official White House briefing, Press Secretary Sean Spicer indicated an executive order beginning the process to renegotiate NAFTA may be just ahead, and didn't say no when asked if the president planned to greenlight two pipeline deals mothballed by the Obama administration.
All right, so that was John Roberts on Special Report last night. This is Sandy Rios. Is your head spinning? Well, it should be, because each and every single one of those things that President Donald Trump did yesterday is going to affect you. You know, I talked a great deal about the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal with you in the last year. We talked about how bad it is. It's one of those agreements that was thousands, you know, of pages. And no one could read it. Remember, the only way they could read it was to go to this private room and have special permission. They couldn't carry it out. And Jeff Sessions was one of the few that went in to read it. And it turned out to have so many bad things in it. And so by a stroke of his pen, because Congress has not ratified it yet or voted on it yet, Donald Trump was able to remove us from the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. Dave Brat will be joining us, Congressman Dave Brat, in just a few minutes. He's an economist, and I'm going to ask him what he thinks about that. But I can tell you from people that I know and talk to and have interviewed, it's a really good thing. And then, of course, we have the fact that there's a hiring freeze. D.C. is just a sweltering mess of overpaid, job-secure, lazy people. And, okay, some of them work really hard. I happen to know some of those that work really hard, but it is bloated, unbelievably padded, overpaid, and the fact that there's a hiring freeze is a good thing. Trust me, it's a very good thing. And I think Donald Trump actually wants to go through and cut the federal workforce. So that will be interesting. You know, it's not the first time it's been tried, but the unions are already howling. And so, that'll be a fight. And then the Mexico City policy, not spending money, not giving tax dollars to any entity overseas that pays or supports abortion. Those are amazing decisions in one day, and that's just a portion of what President Trump did yesterday. Also, you heard how John Roberts reported that first day, but you might be interested to see how other media like CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, NBC, ABC, World News Tonight, how they reported that first day. Let's listen.
A rough start to his presidency, a weekend of tweeting tantrums and falsehoods from the president and his spokesman.
A flurry of activity after a rocky weekend Trump and his team spent defending the size of his inauguration crowd.
His press secretary today pressed about his own inaccurate claims.
Did you hear Sean Spicer saying that he can disagree with the facts and bring his own facts, or as Kellyanne Conway called them, alternate facts?
A major lawsuit accuses the president of violating the Constitution.
4 days into the Trump administration and just two cabinet nominees have been confirmed.
Yeah, all right. So that just gives you a smattering of how it's being reported. And that's how millions of Americans are hearing it. I watched the press conference with Sean Spicer yesterday. Sean is the press secretary, and I've been kind of hard on Sean. I don't know if I've been hard on him at this mic, but I wasn't impressed with him being chosen, and I was concerned. But I tell you, he knocked it out of the ballpark yesterday. He was winsome. He knew his information. He handled the press, I thought, masterfully. So I take back, even if I didn't say it, my lack of satisfaction with the choice of Sean Spicer, at least based on his performance yesterday. I want you to hear just a portion of it because, again, I think he knocked it out of the ballpark. You have to know that, you know, D.C. is abuzz with Sean Spicer fighting back the reports from, I think they started from NPR, of there being not many people at the inauguration, showing this picture that it looked as though it were sparsely attended. And so Sean fought back over the weekend. And if you listen to just the media reporting out of Washington, you know, he did something terrible by fighting back. He gave some statistics about the use of Metro, which turned out not to be true. They had gotten not accurate, not finalized. And he had to walk back. And so they're calling it a disaster. But he publicly said, no, those stats about the usage of Metro were given to us by the inaugural committee, and it turns out that they were from a different time in the day or something to that effect. So, but, you know, the press is all about, you know, gotcha, 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 and Washington is convinced that Sean Spicer did something horrible by talking about fighting back on the report that there weren't many people at the inauguration, which, of course, I happen to know there were lots of people there because I was there. All right, but Sean Spicer handled it very well. Well, see for yourself. This is Cut 7.
We had a tweet go out about Martin Luther King. Think about how racially charged that is. And someone rushes out and says to the entire press corps that the president of the United States has removed the bust from his office. Think about what the signal. Hold on, please.
And apologize.
No, no. He actually apprised to, quote, my colleagues. Where was the apology to the president of the United States? Where was the apology to millions of people who read that and thought how racially insensitive that was?
Well, you said that this was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period, both in person and around the globe.
Right. To both witness in person, and largest. Around the globe. Yes. The total audience it was.
Total audience, but not simply in person.
But that, right. But again, I didn't say in person. It's about a constant theme. It's about sitting here every time and being told, no, well, we don't think he can do that. He'll never accomplish that. He can't win that. It won't be the biggest. It's not going to be that good. The crowds aren't that big. He's not that successful. The narrative and the default narrative is always negative. And it's demoralizing. You know,
it's always going to be positive.
It's not. And sometimes we'll make mistakes. I promise you that. But it's not always got to be negative, Jim. When we're right, say we're right. When we're wrong, say we're wrong.
All right. The only thing is, Sean has to understand, and you need to know too, that one of the strategies of the left is to demoralize. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to demoralize conservatives in this country, people that voted for Donald Trump, by constantly giving a steady stream of bad news. They want you to be demoralized, disengage, and stay home. And that's what we nearly did, really. I think if you'd ask us a year or so ago, we just felt like we'd been socked in the stomach, you know, and just losing heart. I had people writing me, I'm discouraged. I don't want to be part of this anymore. I try, you know, I give up. That's what they're aiming for. So when Sean says it's demoralizing, trust me, privately they're going, yes, that's what they're trying to do. So I hope somebody gets to Sean and tells him that so that he can understand what we're up against here. James Rosen did a really good, I'm going to keep on this because I think Sean deserves credit for what he did last night. James Rosen was at the press briefing, and he gave a good report last night as well. Let's listen.
In his first White House briefing, President Trump's press secretary defended his excoriation of the news media over the weekend for their reporting on the size of the inaugural crowd and other issues, saying the real issue is a perceived pattern of hostile coverage.
There is this constant theme to undercut the enormous support that he has. And I think it's just unbelievably frustrating when you're continually told it's not big enough, it's not good enough, you can't win.
Spicer stood by his claim that the inaugural was the most watched ever, counting in-person and electronic viewership. He told reporters he will never intentionally lie from the podium, even as he acknowledged having passed along subway ridership figures provided by the inaugural committee that proved erroneous. In all, Spicer's tone was far more ingratiating than on Saturday, when he sharply criticized a Time reporter for an erroneous report later corrected, alleging that the president had removed a bust of Martin Luther King that remains in the Oval Office.
This was irresponsible and reckless.
Spicer also took the media to task for their depictions of the inaugural crowd.
Photographs of the inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way, in one particular tweet, to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't know about you, but I say gloves off, fight them. Who cares? I mean, they've had their way for so long. You should have heard them even with him yesterday. This is the thing they wanted to talk about. Although I have to say it was one of the best press briefings I've heard in a long time anyway. There was a lot more people in the room and there were some really great questions. But James goes on to complete this report on Sean. Let's listen.
On Sunday, journalists across the spectrum voiced dismay at Spicer's performance. The New York Times' Binyamin Applebaum tweeted, "This is not a political campaign. It is not a game. This is now the White House lying to the American people." For their part, Spicer's colleagues defended their decision to focus so soon after a largely successful inaugural on media bias.
Are you saying there's a conspiracy here?
I'm saying there's an obsession by the media to delegitimize this president. And we are not going to sit around and let it happen.
It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office
on
day one.
Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that.
Fueling the fire was the president's own visit on Saturday to CIA headquarters, where Mr. Trump, too, disputed inaugural crowd estimates and made clear his beef with reporters did not end with the campaign.
That, as you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth.
While rebuking Chuck Todd for being overly dramatic, the White House also appears to have taken a suggestion of his, namely the creation of four so-called Skype seats, through which reporters from outlets outside the Beltway will be able to pose questions during the daily briefing.
All right, so there you go. And now I have to tell you some things quickly before Congressman Brett joins us. Coming on the tail end of that, the Trump administration is seriously considering defunding NPR. NPR and also a national public television. And of course, there's an article in the Daily Signal, which I don't have time to go into, about the bias of NPR. If you listen to it, you know that's true. And I did not realize that the person heading up NPR right now is a former CEO of the American Civil Liberties Union. So, you know, I guess maybe they might have a bias, call me crazy, but he's thinking about defunding them, which I think would be a good thing. Let them be privately owned. They have a good donor base and a lot of fans, and so they don't need our tax dollars. This is a great story. I could spend an hour on this, but Donald Trump is named as the new FCC chairman, Ajit Pai. Ajit is fabulous. He's one of two Republicans on that committee. He has fought by himself all of the dastardly things that have been done by the Federal Communications Commission for a long time, and in fact paid a tremendous price personally, been threatened because he knew that the FCC was trying to control content on the internet. And so now he is the chairman, and now there are two vacancies that have just opened up. So all that house is about to change. And also the Trump White House has begun with an English-only website for the Office of the President, English-only. So that's also interesting. Another really pretty big deal if we had time to talk about it. But coming up next, Congressman Dave Brat. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, do you want to go on a vacation with a purpose?
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. A lot of people love to go to the beach. I'm one of them. How about the mountains? Yeah, a lot of folks are raising their hand right now when I say the mountains. Well, this year, why don't you go with us on a spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and have a vacation with an educational and a spiritual purpose. If you'd like to go with us in June or September to D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, we'd love to have you join us. Just find out all the information at spiritualheritagetours.com. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will join us as our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way on our rich Christian heritage here in the U.S. We hope you can join us, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. When I was a student at Asbury College, I had a crisis of faith, and I went one day to pray for God to speak to my heart. While I was sitting on a bench on our campus, I opened up a book about Billy Graham, and I began to read about an experience he had as a young man. He also had a crisis of faith. He was in California, and he went out into the woods and found a large rock where he began to pray. And at that rock, he made a decision to obey God no matter what. Charles Stanley told me years ago that the most important priority in his life was to obey God. Well, put those two things together. Sometimes you need to go to the rock, and I don't mean a physical rock. I mean the rock Jesus Christ. And at that rock, you need to affirm that you are obedient to him no matter what. Go to the rock. Go to the rock now and make your stand for Jesus Christ today. Do you want to learn more? Go to choosegreatness.com. That's choosegreatness.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. A group of patriots in Belpaine, Minnesota, has decided enough is enough. City Hall was forced to remove a memorial honoring fallen veterans after the Freedom From Religion Foundation complained. The memorial showed a silhouette of a soldier kneeling in front of a cross, a moving tribute in the town's Veterans Memorial Park. But the Freedom From Religion Foundation said the memorial violated the separation of church and state. Fearing a lawsuit, City Hall begrudgingly ordered the cross removed. But that decision did not set well with locals. Many citizens posted crosses in their front yards. Business owners did the same. And over the weekend, more than a dozen crosses were posted in the Memorial Park, guarded by the 2nd Brigade Motorcycle Club and the Patriot Guard Riders. And I sincerely doubt the Freedom From Religion crowd wants to tangle with a bunch of patriotic bikers. I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Senate has just this hour confirmed Mike Pompeo to be the next director of the CIA. Under the new president, Director Pompeo previously represented Kansas's 4th congressional district. He's an Army veteran. He's a West Point graduate. He was confirmed tonight by a vote of 66 to 32. Interesting thing about those numbers, in these 66 yes votes, that number includes 15 Democrats who voted yes on his nomination. Of the 32 no votes, that number includes one Republican who voted no. The one Republican who voted against the Pompeo nomination was Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. After the confirmation vote this evening, Mike Pompeo just moments ago was sworn in to his new job by Vice President Mike Pence. Mike Pompeo now becomes the third of the new president's nominees to be confirmed after General Mattis was confirmed at Defense and General Kelly was confirmed at Homeland Security.
All right, well, that has to be first, having Rachel Maddow's voice on the Sandy Rios show. But that is what happened last night. At least the third appointment by President Donald Trump has been confirmed by the Senate. You just heard it describe it very handily. Mike Pompeo served in the Senate House for a long time congressman from Kansas. So now he's going to be the new CIA director. Well, one of our favorite congressmen is joining us this morning from the 7th District of Virginia. Congressman Dave Brad is no stranger to my listeners, but if in case you're from outer space, you just moved here. He made himself known for defeating Eric Cantor in a complete upset in Virginia's 7th District. Of course, Eric had tremendous power in the House, and it was an amazing thing. Dave, by trade, is an economist and a professor, and so he has added a great deal to just the economic knowledge. I'd say that the bar went up pretty high, Congressman Brat, when you came into the House. You know, I remember reading a stat that hardly, as I recall, almost no one serving in the House had even studied economics. Did you ever hear a stat like that?
Yeah, no, I'm one of the few economists. Back a while ago, we had Dick Armey back working with Ronald Reagan, economist out of Texas. So it's good to have an economist around.
It really is. And since you are such a thing, I want to talk to you about the economy and some of the decisions that President Trump has made regarding money and the way we spend it. I want to talk. I think you and I have talked at least briefly on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I've covered it a lot with other people, Congressman, but I'm assuming you think us pulling out of that is a good thing. And if so, why? And if not, why?
Yeah, no. And just so your folks know, you can go check out my votes over the past couple of years. I was against that thing from the beginning. And so in my win, I ran on outsider themes, two and a half, 3 years ago. And so I've been pretty consistent on all this. And the basic reason is because it's sold on the merits of free trade, right? That's the argument you hear, and it's intended to put pressure on you up here. Well, you got to be a free trader. And I am a free trader, right? Free trade, the benefits both countries and all that kind of thing. But free trade is just part of the free market system that your country is supposed to choose and work by. And so the hypocrisy of it is we don't have any free markets in this country anymore. And so if you don't have free markets internally, and if your small business guys and women are paying Obamacare health care premiums and they're paying $2.5 trillion in regulatory costs every year and they're doing OSHA safety and EPA environmental and every other regulation under the sun and your costs are through the roof, and then India has much lower costs and China has much lower costs, then our elites say, okay, good, now go out and do free trade and compete against the rest of the world. Right, you small business, we just tortured you with regulations. There's no level playing field, but we believe in free trade. So go, you know, good luck to you when you compete against China. And so our small business guys are just, you know, ticked off at us and politicians who are just, you know, out of touch. And so that's the basis of my vote. And so Trump has mentioned some tariff kind of stuff, and we're going to have a debate over how to proceed. But I think the basic thing he wants to do is just level the playing field so that we benefit American workers again, and I'm all on board that train.
Yeah, you know, the opposition is saying that this is a tremendous, because China wasn't part of the TPP, at least not yet. It was some 12 other countries in the Pacific.
Yeah,
most of them, of course, all of them smaller than the United States, and that was one of the arguments against it, was that they had an equal voice in this treaty with the United States, who has so much at stake, and We're just in a different playing field. Okay, but the challenge is that now they're saying that China will have free reign. This is a tremendous advantage to China in terms of trade in the Trans-Pacific. What do you think about that?
I think the critics that are saying that are disingenuous. I went to Princeton Seminary 30 years ago, and while I was there, I went over to Woodrow Wilson School at the university and took, you know, international political economy and all this in China. And we've been bending over backwards to help China because we wanted their next generation of kids to become capitalists. Well, now they kind of have done that, right? And so, but now they're rolling us. And so these people that are saying, well, this whole TPP setup was, you know, the intellectual construct that was going to put pressure on China and whatever. Well, China hasn't bent at all to our will. And so that's the most passive instrument possible. Instead of that, what do you got? You got Donald Trump just won an election. And all of a sudden, he's saying, hey, let's rethink everything with China, right? Let's rethink the Taiwan One China policy. Let's think through all of this from scratch to see really what is benefiting our country first. And so these weak attempts at, you know, putting a little pressure on China in the past have been just that. It's just window dressing, and it's used to cloak something else, and probably usually the free trade argument.
Yeah,
and so I don't buy it.
Well, the one thing, just before we move to the next topic, too, just to reiterate, this is very interesting. You and I both know that Paul Ryan pushed the TPP. So did the leadership. All the leadership pushed this deal, and so this is probably a big disappointment to them and their relationships with major global corporations. Don't you think?
Yeah, well, right. And look at what a trade agreement is. Why is a free trade agreement 5,000 pages? Because all the elites get to put their few lines in that agreement, right? The average Joe and Mary doesn't get to put their line in a trade agreement to help their business, but the big guys do. And that's what this election was all about, right? It was the outsiders versus the elites and trying to make things fair again.
All right, we have to talk about this other thing. You know, the last time you joined me, we just didn't have enough time. And so, and we probably won't this morning either, but we have more time anyway. I really want to talk to you about this whole Obamacare repeal and replace, because we hear constantly different things. I heard this morning that Bill Cassidy from Georgia, is saying that he's telling them that their states can keep Obamacare if they like it. So he's sort of peeling off from Republican orthodoxy right now. So, but the point is that there's dissension on this. So how do you see it right now in terms of repeal and also replace?
Well, the first thing I see is what you just said. I mean, I'm horrified at some of these comments that are coming out. When you tell the American people for 6 years in a row you're going to repeal and just repeal Obamacare first place, right, to keep your word, you got to keep your word, so we got to repeal it. And I'm not sure if we're going to repeal it all, right? So we're doing what's called this reconciliation process. And that's the process the Democrats use to pass Obamacare, where you only need 51 votes in the Senate. And you can only use that technique once per budget, right? So we're going to use it on Obamacare. And the problem there is we probably won't be able to get rid of all of the insurance regulations and whatever, because just for some technical reasons. But people, if you really want to get in the weeds, that's a major problem. But the issue you said is true. Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, also yesterday said very simply, says repeal and replace is a bunch of buzzwords. And he said, in quotes, you know, we need to work with Democrats and we need to fix Obamacare, you know, not repeal it.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm just, you know, it's stunning because you cannot have a hodgepodge, right? You cannot have the federal government kind of in the business of providing national health care. And either you have a free market system and you don't. And so now part of the compromise that's going on, that is just starting to come out yesterday and today, just finally, is this debate over how much of it are we going to block grants back down to the states? And what are the terms of that? And that gets very complex, right? Because if you block grant money, and there's a couple ways being discussed, right? Just a total block grant or what's called these per capita, you know, block grants based on how many people the state has, et cetera. But if you block grant money down to the states and let them set the insurance regulations at the state level, then it gets interesting, because then can you shop across state lines, right, and have all the competitive parts.
Right.
And so it's really a hodgepodge, right? I'm not sure if I made that clear enough, right? But there's a huge tension. If you block grant authority down to states and say, okay, states, you're in charge of your own business, right? Each state will get to write their own regs. And some states can choose to have Obamacare, right? Massachusetts and the liberal states or whatever. And then the conservative states won't. But then how does the cross-state competition work, where you get to shop across country to bring rates down? And so that's the latest buzz going around. But the main concern, my main concern, is you do not want the federal government involved in these, you know, intimate healthcare decisions, because we're already breaking the bank on healthcare costs, right? The Obamacare, the costs are going through the roof, and that's the main cost driver for Medicare, Social Security, Veterans Administration, Medicaid, everything health based. And so, if we don't bring that cost curve down, we're in trouble. And the federal government has shown no ability to bring that cost curve down, because we can print money, weekend going to debt. We're $20 trillion in debt right now, likely $30 trillion in debt in 10 years, $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities to those programs I just mentioned, Medicare. And the states have a much better track record, right? On Medicaid, when the states have to pay half of it, all of a sudden they start watching their money. And so it is good to block grant it down to the states, but we're in a mess right now. That's the basic outlay of what's going on.
You know, I confess, and I think I hinted at this last time, the thing that makes me really nervous is the replace, what you're talking about. Why in the world does the federal government, I realize that President Trump has said this, it's a piece, we're going to replace it. Well, why does the federal government have to replace it with anything? Why not let this go to the free market? I mean, honestly, my understanding is that whole 20 million figure is just false. And we also know that so many people lost their insurance, probably to even negate those numbers. They lost their insurance through their companies. It's just been chaos for more than 20 million people. And so I guess, would there be a way? I know it would be a hard solution, but just to let go of it and let the free market step in.
Well, so you put your finger on it, that 20 million number, right? So the Democrat talking points, they're going around saying 20 million people are going to lose their health care. Well, it's not true. I've heard numbers closer to 3 million, and the other folks would have been eligible for Medicaid and other programs, et cetera. And 3 million is a manageable number. There's all sorts of ways you can deal with that. But to answer your first question, why are we getting so weak-kneed and losing our backbone up here? And that's the answer, because the Democrats, the March on Washington, the March in New York, Chicago, et cetera, all the big cities, they're putting political pressure on us. And they're saying we now have an entitlement to full-blown health care, right? The average health care now, according to Kaiser, for a family of four is $17,000 a year. Mm. And you can see, right, the average family income in Virginia is $65,000. And health care is $17,000 out of $65,000.
Wow.
And so you can just see that is not a long-run solution. It's going to fall apart. And so that's part of the debate. And the debate we got into it last time, the conservatives and the Heritage Foundation position is we want this thing wrapped up within 2 years before the next election cycle. And the folks that are getting squishy want the replace to go out 3 years, 4 years, whatever, because maybe they don't even want a replacement, right? And so they're pushing out the timeline to 3 years, and then Trump will be in an electoral contest again, and then they might have to punt it out even more. And so we have to get this replacement done. It's one-fifth of the economy. And if we don't fix this thing, our kids aren't going to get any of these programs. And that's everybody out there listening. I hope you all will write opinion pieces in your newspapers. And if you need, I write up all this stuff on my webpage, just davebratt.com.
Okay.
And you can go out there, and I go into all these details and lay it out. But please write across the nation on these issues to inform voters as to what's going on. Your kids, Medicare and Social Security, are insolvent in 15 years.
Wow.
And in 50 years, they won't get hardly anything unless we fix this health care problem. And it needs a real fix where you bend that cost curve down. And so you need to demand from your political leaders, tell me right now to my face that what you're doing is going to bend that cost curve down for my kids. Hmm. Right? And everybody ought to be writing op-eds and supporting the good politicians out there. Because it's a hard job up here.
Yeah, I know it is, and we only have a minute left, unfortunately. But I was told by some people on the inside that after Trump's won the nomination, that not much had changed in Congress. But that's been a few months. Do you think that there's any kind of does he hold much sway in the walls of Congress right now, or is it really just business as usual?
Yeah.
Just 30 seconds here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the DPP debate, everyone, even the Democrats on the Sunday shows, have come around to Trump's position and said, look, he was right. China really has too much power. And on the border and on taxes and on the middle class and getting everybody to work and getting a welfare to work mentality going again and no baloney anymore. It's got to work, right? It's got to be pragmatic. And so he's having a profound effect up here. And now it's our job to do good policy that will benefit the American people, and that we cannot wimp out.
All right, Dave Brat.com, DaveBrat.com, Congressman from the 7th District, always a favorite. Congressman, thanks. It's so great to talk to you. And perhaps we'll see you at the March for
God
Life
bless,
this
Sandy.
Week. All right, thanks. Same to you, sir. Hey, bye-bye.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program. I encourage you to listen as we work verse by verse through the scriptures each Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. Join me as we explore the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk radio program, Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
American Family Association invites you to Fusion, a Heart Cry for Revival conference. It's a trying time for our nation, and we urge Christian leaders to join us as we seek Christ together. We'll learn, pray, and strategize for action. Join us April 23rd through the 27th at the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
First Love, the latest album release from Dennis Jernigan, features some of his earliest songs, as well as some new ones. It's a musical return to Dennis Jernigan's first love, Jesus.
You are my first love.
Psalm 32:7 says that He is our hiding place and He will surround us with songs of deliverance. I can't think of a better picture of a relationship than me singing to my God singing to me, and true intimacy is just as simple as this. Lord, here's my heart, into me see.
You are my strength when I am weak. You are the treasure that I seek. You are my all in all.
I stand amazed in all of your glory.
First Love by Dennis Jernigan. Available now for a suggested donation of $12.99 at afastore.net.
I stand.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Michael Flynn is a patriot, an accomplished intelligence leader, and a decorated veteran. I'm proud to consider him a friend and delighted that Donald Trump has selected the retired lieutenant general to be his national security advisor. Others are not so happy. They include the hard left and other never-Trumpers who seek first and foremost to undermine the new administration. Some foreign governments obviously don't like General Flynn's clear-eyed understanding of the threats they pose to our country and his ability to help the president counter them. And some are terrified by the prospect that Mike Flynn will help Donald Trump drain the swamp of politicized, bloated bureaucracy that now reduces the effectiveness of U.S. intelligence. Hence, it appears, groundless suggestions that Flynn dealt improperly with Russian officials. To all such critics, I say, Godspeed and good hunting, Mike Flynn. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The Senate is debating Mike Pompeo's nomination to be CIA director, with Republicans furious he was not confirmed Friday. While Rex Tillerson's nomination to be the next Secretary of State was approved by the Foreign Relations Committee 11-10 a short time ago.
Hours ahead of the Foreign Relations Committee vote, Senator Marco Rubio announced he's backing Rex Tillerson's nomination to be Secretary of State. Quote, "It would be against our national interest to have this confirmation unnecessarily delayed or embroiled in controversy. Therefore, despite my reservations, I will support Mr. Tillerson's nomination." Fellow National Security Republican Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham said yesterday they intend to support Tillerson.
In my office visit, he said that when America doesn't lead, other people will, and the vacuum is always filled by bad actors. He said that we have to have a foreign policy that engages the world. We need to lead from the front.
Although Democrats have slowed up the process, on Fox News Sunday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell signaled confidence.
I believe we'll be able to confirm the president's entire cabinet. There's great enthusiasm.
While Tillerson has won over skeptical national security Republicans, McCain wasn't ready to express, quote, utmost confidence in the new president.
I do not know, because he has made so many comments that are contradictory. But I think the fact that he's appointed and nominated these outstanding individuals is bound to be an encouraging sign.
Unlike John McCain, who never changes his mind on anything. This is Sandy Rios back with you. You know, I'm sure you figured out that I'm not a fan of Senator John McCain. I mean, I've never seen a man do more damage. You know, he does more bad than he does good. I mean, he's all over the map, but he's concerned about President Trump changing his mind. And it's, yeah, I would say, you know, Trump has been, he has vacillated during the course of his lifetime on issues, no question about it, but nothing compared to John McCain. And so, but the battle is raging. Let's just say this is a skirmish in the Senate, and it's over President Trump's nominations. As of last night, he has three. Mike Pompeo now is the CIA director. But interestingly enough, this is not what the Democratic leadership promised. Chuck Schumer, by the way, did you know that he sort of snuck in on the inauguration the other day? He wasn't even on the schedule, and he stood up and made a speech, a lengthy speech, and no one knew where that came from or how he got on the platform in that manner. So, you know, just thought you might want to know, he's the minority leader in the Senate now, so he will be up to antics just like Harry Reid, no question about it. But Mike Emanuel goes on to tell something. I think this is kind of, well, I'll just let you listen. This is Mike Emanuel, the second part of his report on special report last night.
Tempers flared Friday between Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and Arkansas Republican Senator Tom Cotton, with Republicans accusing Schumer of breaking his word to confirm Pompeo on Inauguration Day, along with Defense Secretary James Mattis and Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly. The incident was first reported by the Weekly Standard and involved Cotton getting in Schumer's face about Pompeo. When Schumer told Cotton if he had been in the Senate 8 years ago, he would know the CIA director wasn't confirmed on Inauguration Day, Cotton fired back, quote, "8 years ago, I was getting shot at in Afghanistan, so don't talk to me about where I was 8 years ago." On Sunday, Schumer defended Democrats slowing down confirmations, even if they don't have the votes to defeat them.
We call it the swamp cabinet, billionaires and bankers. And it's very simple. There are more people with huge financial holdings, which they have to divest under law so they don't have conflicts of interest.
After the cabinet, there are signs the Supreme Court confirmation will be an even bigger battle. Schumer's already promising a tooth and nail fight against whomever the president nominates. Brett?
All right, and you can bet that he'll cause it, and he will be lying all the way. So that's just what they do. That's just what they do. It's become standard fare in the Senate, and there are so few good senators, honestly. And I'll give you, let's see, just those of you across the country want to know what your senators are up to. Senator Bill Nelson from Florida is saying that he will not vote for Pompeo, Tillerson, or Sessions. He doesn't give a reason. He just says, I'm not voting for them. And then on the Republican side, Tom Tillis from North Carolina was featured in the Charlotte Observer, and this is what he says. Since the election, I've heard some of my fellow Republicans claim that the party received a decisive mandate from voters. Let's be clear. The American people didn't give the GOP a stamp of approval or a mandate to ram through an ideological-driven far-right agenda. If the election was a mandate for anything, it was for elected officials in both parties to break through the gridlock to finally start producing results. There's a lot more to that article, and you might want to look for it in the Charlotte Observer. Tom Tillis complaining about ramming through a far-right agenda. Those of you in, of course, Charlotte is the city in North Carolina that did away, caused North Carolina legislature to have to pass House Bill HB 2 to assign, say that people should go to the bathrooms that comport with their biology. That all started in Charlotte. And so, you know, he's from, I don't know, maybe that's his neck of the woods. I just know that Tillis is bad on issues, and I'm disappointed that North Carolina voters sent him back, honestly, to the Senate. But they did, and Arizona sent back John McCain, and Kentucky sent back Mitch McConnell. So, you know, and I could go on and on with the list. But let's just say that there is another election coming up in 2 years. A lot of senators will be up, and you just must understand that if there's going to be a huge, deep change in the country, we cannot keep sending these very bad senators and congressmen to serve. Just because you know them, they held your baby, they're related to your first cousin, Mary, whatever. Those are not good reasons. It really is. We really, really must clean not only the House. The House is cleaner than the Senate. The Senate is just a mess, and it has been for a long time. And, you know, we probably have more conservative senators in the Senate now than we've had in my lifetime, and there are only a handful of them. So what is up with that? Are people not paying attention? I think, you know, maybe that'll change. And so, and then we add to this, and I mentioned this with Congressman Brad a few minutes ago, Republican Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana is now trying to work with the Democrats to keep Obamacare. If the states want it, that they should be able to keep it. That's what he's trying to do. And I think you heard Dave Brat say there was another senator working with him, did the same thing. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. So all of you in Wisconsin, what is the matter with Senator Johnson? Aren't we trying to get rid of Obama? Did they not promise? Did they not brag and run and campaign on the fact that they had voted to do away with Obamacare? Did they not boast of that? And now they have the audacity to try to work to keep it at a time when we could actually do away with it? It's time for outrage on that. It really is. And then there are other things that are going to be happening if we're talking about the Senate. The president, President Trump, I started to say president-elect. I'm not used to saying President Trump yet. But they are combing through budgets to find ways to save money. And, of course, Trump has called it tremendous waste, fraud, and abuse, which there is. And as a matter of fact, Heritage came up with a document called Blueprint for Balance, a federal budget for 2017. And they're actually relying heavily on that. Jim DeMint, of course, former senator who got out of the Senate from South Carolina and went to head up Heritage. And I have to tell you, Jim DeMint has just really made a huge difference in Washington. He's moved Heritage Foundation to the right, and he's done a lot to transform. And Heritage already had tremendous influence in Washington and nationally, even in ways that you didn't know. But in terms of writing policy, it's a think tank, and giving Republican congressmen, senators, and members of the House ideas, suggestions with all their great research. And so Jim DeMint has really moved Heritage to the right in wonderful ways. And actually, Heritage has become much more vocal on social issues, defending marriage, and they used to not even touch that kind of thing. So I just want you to understand what a difference one person can make. You know, if they're, you know, think of Ted Cruz, who was so demonized in the Senate. If you just itemize the things that he's accomplished, it is tremendous. So we don't need, you know, 50, even 100. Well, of course, that would be great. But even if we had, 25 good senators, can you imagine? So anyway, but I digress. So they are talking about cutting various agencies. But of course, it's not just the Democrats, it's the Republicans who, you know, have poured tons of money in various agencies and entities because it's their constituency. It's the good old boys game. And so there is going to be real pushback. I could go into detail, but I'm not going to because it would take me a long time. Lisa Murkowski's upset about talks about shutting down a program that pays for It's called the Essential Air Service Program. Pays for airports in rural areas, and Alaska, of course, benefits a great deal from that. So she's fighting back on that. The Legal Services Corporation, which is supposed to be sort of a boondoggle, President Reagan tried to abolish it, but ran into a wall in Congress. So you see how it goes. Like, you can't take that away because that's my people and that's my stuff and that's our money. And so, and that's how we got ourselves into this mess. Roger Wicker from Mississippi is upset because there's discussion of removing the catfish inspection program. The Heritage Foundation argues that it is a duplicate of work being done by the Food and Drug Administration. But Senator Wicker is already on notice. He's going to, you know, draw the line in the sand, not going to have that. So you can see it's going to be kind of a messy thing. I wanted to tell you, I'm going to change the subject because I had some updates. Today, there's supposed to be another big demonstration. This, according to People's Action, they're calling it the next step in the resistance. Tuesday, we continue to build this movement by blocking Trump's notorious picks for cabinet. Senate Republicans are rushing the confirmation process for the nominees, the richest, whitest, and oldest set of cabinet picks in modern history. They must be stopped. Well, then they talk about Tom Price, Dr. Tom Price, who wants to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, dumping 30 million people off health care. Of course, that's a lie. But then, you know, when did truth ever sort of enter this is People's Action. Well, if you can imagine the People's Action, what does that sound like to you? Well, those of you that are too young to understand communism, that's kind of a word they use all the peoples, the workers. And so the People's Action is coming together with MoveOn.org. Thank you, George Soros, and Working Families Party, the workers, you know, and they're going to try to stop Tom Price at Swamp Cabinet is their hashtag. And if they describe who we are, People's Action is a powerful new force for democracy and economic fairness. From family farms to big cities, from coast to coast, we're fighting for community over greed, justice over racism, and people and planet over big corporations. Sounds like good, doesn't it? Sounds good. They're masters at making themselves sound good when, in fact, they are not good at all. And speaking of old communists, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn were spotted on the streets of Washington demonstrating. Bill Ayers, Bernadine was more the head of the Weather Underground than Bill was. He kind of gets credit for that, but it was Bernadine, really, who led it, and Bill was kind of her sidekick, also happened to be her husband later. But they did terrible things. They oversaw bombings in federal buildings. They said publicly, I wish I still had the audio of this. Bernadine Dorn asking for the violent overthrow of the United States of America. This is what they're all about. And so they were there marching, you know, and the women's march, doing, you know, whatever dastardly thing they might do. Bill held up a sign that said, no racism, no hate. Of course, that's what he always says. But what he does is stokes the fires of groups like Black Lives Matter. He stokes racism in order to advance his leftist causes. And Bernadine Dorn, her sign, say no to Islamophobia. And of course, Bernadine and Bill were both involved in that. That they tried to break a blockade into Israel. That was when that Israeli soldier was attacked. And they're just trouble. They're anarchists. And of course, they were there doing their part. And one other thing. I think this is actually kind of cool. People are calling for a boycott of the 89th Academy Awards on February the 26th. It's call out to all deplorables. Boycott the 89th Academy Awards Sunday, February 6th. Power in numbers. Time to give Hollywood a lesson they'll never forget. You know, I'm all in favor of that. I'm going to ban it. I'm going to join this boycott. And you might want to, too. Just forget it. I just don't even want to watch their movies anymore. I'm sick of them. There are a lot of other movies that you can see. Thank goodness for Netflix and other ways. You know, some actors whose names you've never heard are great on the screen. And we can enjoy them and leave out these people who are out of their minds in Hollywood and who would like to transform this country in their really decadent image. We're not going to let that happen. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.